show with Jason Davies and Janice Peterson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Friday. Yeah, happy Friday.
Yeah.
So quite a week.
Yep.
Yeah. And locally here, we're at 103.3 FM. And if you want to listen online, go to kpca.fm and hit the Listen Now button.
Well.
Oh, I'm going to hit the button.
I'm listening.
Oh, are you?
I was confused for a second.
We have our Listen Now headphones on.
It's been a long week.
It has been a long week.
Anyway, anything that you want to announce before we include our guest in the conversation?
Well, I don't think so, only because our guest was part of some of the things that I would have announced. And so I think we can just incorporate it in our conversation.
Should we let everybody know who's here?
I think we should know.
Yeah. 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 Jason,
do it. All this teasing is just
killing me. It's killing me. It's just pounding.
Well, this morning we have Brian Barnicle, who is a Petaluma native and the founder of OutThink, which I'm dying to hear what OutThink is all about. Welcome, Brian. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So, Janice and I just came from a meeting, as well as Brian, right over there. And should we just get started with that?
Yeah. It was basically the community meeting, the first community meeting on the fairgrounds and what's going to happen with the future of the fairgrounds, because public needs to understand it's 55 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And the fairgrounds for the last, you know, many, many years has had a dollar lease with the city.
A dollar a year.
With the city. and it's been, you know, a benefit for everybody, but now things are changing.
Yeah.
The lease is coming up, and it's not 1940s. It's 2020, and we have to look at the bigger picture for the fairgrounds. But I thought it was interesting, all the speakers that were there today.
Which looked to be over 100 people there.
Oh, there was over 100 people, I would say. And it was really a diverse community, actually. A lot of farming people from the farming community, but from schools. The Live Oak School was there. Yeah. And then I saw retired city employees. Jim Carr was there.
Right.
Mike Moore was there.
Yep.
And, you know, they were talking about the Corona Reach specific plan, which I brought up the other night about the Corona, and talking about that. And so, you know, the Steve Klotz from Old Red, the past owner of the Redwood Empire Gymnastics was there. There was just a large group of people for a Friday morning. And I think, actually, when I was on the city council, we were talking about the fairgrounds, what direction we were going to go at that time. And it was really important that the fair continue, but it was going to have to be pared down because it is 55 acres. And so today was basically the first discussion, honest discussion, about a direction we're going to go. I'm just hoping that the community is really listened to because, you know, we have a lot of dinosaurs on this committee. And, you know, we're looking at projects that they are pushing today that really don't fit the needs of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a concern. And then I heard the board members, which was interesting, that they actually brought Brian Sobel back on, who was a past city council member, and he was on the fair boards. He's, quote, a political consultant, and he mm-hmm. talks during, and he's a, and he is a commentator during the elections.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he was put on that board because they didn't have a third person on the fair board to participate, so they brought him in.
Which is good, because he's in the middle. I mean, he's kind of...
Well, he was actually
both sides.
If you were facing
right.
it. No.
No, what I'm saying is that he's been on both sides. So.
Well, he has. Yeah. And so so that's good. So I'm going to actually reach out to Brian. But the other thing is I actually got names of other community members that were there
mm-hmm.
that I'd like to really have more discussion on this show about the fairgrounds because it's so important.
Right.
But we have to realize that we need to look at the bigger picture and not just look at that. Even though it's 55 acres in the middle of our town, we can't look at things in isolation because everything connects together.
Was there a general consensus that the status quo isn't really acceptable? Or and there, you said there were about 100 people there. Were there people saying we should do nothing about it? Or were there some people saying it's fine that the city consider other uses? Was there any sort of...
I think it was the beginning of a discussion.
Yeah.
And it was definitely a lot of farming community was there.
Mm-hmm. From the charter school.
And the charter school was heavily, yeah, exactly.
There's 100 and, people. There's only 20 people that spoke.
Right.
I can't say what the consensus was, but I think that there's probably a faction of people in there that would like to see the fairgrounds stay exactly how it is.
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, all the people I've talked to about modifying it aren't really talking about doing much different when it comes to the fair itself. It's more about how the space is utilized for other things. I don't think anyone's saying the fair would go away. So but there are actually people that would say we should do nothing and just continue.
There are some people that want to just do nothing, and then there's other people that
are
housing advocates. Well, and, you know, I think we need to get a real financial analysis of this also.
It's also one of my criticisms of it, or one of my pieces of feedback to the city would be that there was no level setting at the start to say we've been making a dollar a year from this, and all the activities that go on there, none of that revenue makes it back to the city directly. You know, there is some indirect revenue that probably funnel into the city, there could have been a better job of level setting to start it off. To one of the board members at the end talked about, you know, try and get out of your bubble and see all the uses of the fairgrounds, and I think they could have done a better job at the start of the meeting of trying to help people pop their bubble and see all the different uses and the different functions that it does serve.
Well, and I think we also have to understand that, you know, the community is changing, and that is, you know, a pro and con. Mm-hmm. And you need to really incorporate the old, the semi-new, and the new together. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I always talk about, I remember when the East Side was built, and a lot of those people came from Hamilton. After World War II, they were in Hamilton Air Force Base. And a lot of people retired up here because we were a bedroom community. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of diversity here. But I do agree that you really have to have more information at the beginning of the discussion. But I also thought it was interesting that the consultant only had been on the job for a couple days.
Yeah.
And that was kind of interesting to hear. As I would have hoped that it would have been somebody that had a little bit more experience or knowledge of...
Well, then again, maybe he's not tainted with...
Well,
that's
true. No, that's true. But to Brian's point, just bringing in that information at the beginning people had a better picture.
Mm-hmm. I mean, anyone could have given it. The consultant didn't need to give it. There's anyone up on that on the dais knows more than any consultant would about the history of the fairground and what it means.
Well, in the history, the city has grown, obviously, since the fair was originated there. And now that's kind of almost the center of the city, whereas before it was sort of, you know, a little bit ways from it. And
people said that.
And the value of that property has gone up significantly, I would imagine. So, you know, at a time when we're trying to crunch the numbers and figure out how we're going to pay for things like road repair, you know, infrastructure needs, I would think in that context that everybody should be open to revisiting what happens with the fair.
Exactly. Yes. And the process that they described, they said, they've described a very democratic process of going about this.
Yeah.
And I like that. Yeah. And they talked about transparency. And there was a lot of speakers that talked about, we want transparency. We're tired of being in the dark on this thing. And the part that worries me is that they sing that song, but that's not always how it works out.
Well, they've been having meetings for quite a while, and I'd like to kind of know, okay, what was discussed at those meetings? And we did not find that out today at all. Yeah. It was like we're starting from, this is fresh, we're starting today. But no, this group has been meeting, and council members have been meeting on this. And so,
well, they never shared any of the documents.
Exactly. No, they didn't.
Right? I mean, the documents, I believe it was the city council who withheld them too, right? It wasn't the fair board. It was the city who was not wanting those to be shared. So.
Yeah. That's what seems to be happening.
Yeah.
The only part that troubles me is that the process all sounds good, but what are they going to do behind those closed doors? And are they going to be influenced by the public's perspective on what they see?
Yeah. Well, and
that's what I worry about.
Yeah, it was a section of the public there today because it was a Friday. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, a lot of the students were out of school. I mean, this was... I don't know why we couldn't do this starting on a Saturday, because that would bring a lot more people in. And so, you know, a lot of people in the audience, they had to work. They had to get to work.
Was it videoed? Will this be aired?
You know, was it? Okay,
I think so.
Yeah.
It'd be a good opportunity for people to see it. So I imagine we'll probably be able to show it on PCA.
Well, if a volunteer brings in the footage, PCA did not specifically go out and video. There was no requests for it. And even if there was a request, this is a volunteer station, and we'd have to find a volunteer that would be willing to do that. So
was it just some person who was doing it, or was it someone
in the city?
There were a couple of videographers there.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, hopefully that.
I didn't see that. I don't know who they were. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was in the front row, so I didn't see anything in back of me.
It was a packed house.
Yeah, it
was. That's great.
And all the way out the hallway.
Wow.
And they had to bring out more chairs.
I think it's important to keep what Dave King said about not making this a rush process.
Yes, really he did.
Intentionally making it a multi-stage extended process, because otherwise we could wind up with something like Target. And that's, I think that anyone who wants something better for the fairgrounds would agree that the Target shopping center is not a nice complement to a community space like that.
And I think this is important when Amber was talking about housing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people just started saying, we don't want housing there. But if we really start looking back at the Target Center, mm-hmm. and if we look at Deer Creek,
mm-hmm.
many of us wanted those to be mixed-use projects.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, it didn't pencil out, but, you know, a few years later it penciled out because retail, you know, went down the tubes. And so it's...
Even though we had a retail leakage study that told us exactly what we were doing,
and
that's not what we should be doing.
Well, and that's exactly right. And during the hearings, they knew that this was wrong also.
Yeah.
But that's what concerns me about this process. Some of the same people are now representing us on this board. And, you know, the same people are cutting deals behind the scenes with or telling developers, this is how you do it. If you don't like what the Planning Commission says, just appeal it to us and we'll take care of it.
But is anyone seriously considering a strip mall addition
right there?
Who knows? I would be interested to see the documents that are going to be published on the website and see what the thinking was.
I mean, it's not current.
But
we don't even have full tenancy in the buildings that we've got, which was predicted.
Well, and the thing is that I just want to go back to the housing. If those two projects had housing built into it when they were being designed, it would have been a completely different project.
Yeah.
So now you're retrofitting.
Yeah.
So, okay, the Target site is there. We can't get rid of that at this point. But imagine what that would have looked like if we had done housing and mixed use. People would be living there to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you look at the fairgrounds property, the 55 acres, a little bit differently, but you incorporate them together with pathways getting through there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's walkable. So they're connected together. I don't want to see this as the fairgrounds, Target site, McKinley School, and the library, and then downtown, and then we go over the overcrossing, and then we're on at Deer Creek. We need to see this in a holistic way so we have actually bike paths.
Yep.
And that kind of goes into the 101 widening, which they want to extend.
Mm-hmm.
There's a large group that is opposing what the Sonoma County Transportation Authority is doing, SCTA, our representative, who is Kathy Miller, they just want roads, roads, roads. Well, there's a whole coalition coming together and saying, hey, no, we don't want just roads. We want to have alternative transportation modes.
Mm-hmm.
We want bike paths. We want safe sidewalks.
Yes.
We want safe communities. And I think something that's interesting is I don't think the council really understands that it's just not about downtown and safe public walkability.
Mm-hmm.
People want to come out of the mobile home parks and be safe and be able to walk in that area. And that leads to an event that's going to be happening tomorrow morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Tomorrow morning we will have one. I want to go back to a couple of things before that, though. I think it's in the SCTA budget, they're hiding, large road projects connecting communities.
Exactly.
Right? So they make it sound really good. Connecting, mm-hmm. I want to be connected to the community.
Sure.
That sounds great. And you look at how that budget actually, that line item split out, and it's 85% into capital road projects,
mm-hmm.
and then you get 10% into actual pedestrian infrastructure and things like that.
So it's really about, this ballot measure is a boon for developers.
Yeah.
Because what's going to happen is, oh, well, you don't have to pay those fees because we have the taxpayer paying for your road now.
Yep.
And so the developer will be off the hook, and we will be paying for all of these roads, and we won't have any say if we have the council.
You know, I do think there is one remedy for that, and that's the 2020 council election and getting people on there that actually prioritize walkable communities, prioritize alternate roads of transportation, and really will stand by that and take the taxpayer dollars and put it to you know, the public interest. And
so you get it wrong?
So we got a lot of subjects that it looks like that we want to cover in just this 45 minutes that's left. But but before we go there, I'm sure the listeners are wondering, who is Brian Barnicle? Where did you come from? What do you do? And what does Out think?
Yeah, I came from Petaluma. I was born and raised here, went to Petaluma High School. I grew up on a farm, showed cows at the fair, so I, I have an attachment to the fair. I even did a quilting class in 4-H and entered my quilt in the fair.
You still have it?
Oh, yeah.
What's it look like?
It's a hideous multi-patch, several small animated animals and grand squares. Yeah, it's a really, really ugly, ugly quilt, but... yeah, exactly. It was a great class.
Well, if you have children, they'll love it.
Totally. It is definitely made for children, for sure.
Awesome.
And then went to Cal Poly, studied agriculture there, and got my degree in city and regional planning. I consider myself a land use enthusiast, passionate about climate change and good land use decisions. And when I graduated from college, we were in the recession in 2009, so I got into clean energy, and it made me feel good to feel like I was removing carbon from the environment, and there's, you know, still a lot of money flowing into the clean energy industry, so there was jobs there, and I spent the last decade working in clean energy, and then in October of 2019, I left my prior company, and started my new company, Outthink, as you mentioned, and I really want to get back into doing more. I say that our mission is to help clients envision, craft, and execute strategies for growth and decarbonization, and the duality there is growth and decarbonization, because right now we've got a climate crisis, a housing crisis, and we've got a revenue crisis.
Right.
And that's not just Petaluma, that's cities everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so dealing with that three-part crisis means that we not only need our growth and our development to not be emitting carbon, we need to start sequestering carbon, and we've never done that. You know, you go back to the Aztecs, they put themselves out of existence from growth.
Yeah.
And we're going to do the same thing if we don't, you know, really start curtailing the type of development that we're approving here.
Yeah.
And so that's who I am, and, you know, it's been nice to stop working 70 hours a week in Oakland and be able to really put a lot more time into being active in the community, and I'm still working 70-plus hours a week. It's just now opposing bad development projects and trying to educate the community about you know, why land use is so important. People don't understand it. They know traffic. The traffic hits them every day. They lose time with their kids and things like that, but many of the reasons why we have traffic is because of bad land use decisions.
Right.
You know, what you put where is what, you know, that's why it takes so long.
And you said opposing bad development, which is good, but obviously the flip side of that is proposing smart development.
Absolutely, yeah. We're, you know, and this goes to the discussion or the point tomorrow, the event tomorrow, and that's the Corona Smart Station.
Yeah.
You know, it's really an opportunity site to create a sense of place on the east side, to build, you know, build in walkability. There's hundreds of senior citizens that live right across the street. Our city's joined into the, the healthy all ages health thing from the World Health Organization.
Yeah. And when saying across the street, you're referencing the mobile home
parks. Yes, the mobile home parks, exactly.
North Dell.
And, you know, the simple thing, you know, I met with some of those people there, and they drive to Pete's every single day.
Yeah.
So that creates traffic.
Yes, it does.
And this site is zoned for mixed use. We're not talking about 100,000 square foot of mixed use and trying to bring in a whole bunch of stores there. It's, you know, 10,000 square feet. Think about an Acre East Side or an Aquas East Side or, you know, Ray's Deli on the East Side. Those types of places that are really vibrant and that build community and people can walk to. And those seniors, if they didn't get in their car and add traffic, they could be walking and staying healthier.
So just to kind of reel it back a little bit for the listeners, the project that we're talking about is a bit complicated because it's also connected with the Smart Station plan.
Yep.
And so there's been a deal, I guess, with this developer to do something on that land and exchange easements and all of these things. So there's some background there, and that's some of the pressure some of the council members mentioned in voting to push this forward.
Yep.
Which is exactly what you don't want when somebody's making
exactly,
a land use decision.
This is the weird irony, though. I mean, SMART is supposed to be smart. and it would seem to me they would also appreciate the decision that the Planning Commission was making in terms of not supporting this project because there wasn't mixed use. It's a single-family residence with two-car garages. I think it's the mix of affordable housing is like 5% when it was supposed to be 15%.
It's 15%, but then they've broken it out to where only 5% goes to actual low, and then the other 10% is going to the next level.
And it's single-family homes is what they're presenting. Yeah. And one council member said, well, it's like apartments. People are going to buy these, and they're going to rent rooms out. And then that's what a council member stated. It's like an apartment. We just rent rooms out.
How many levels are there?
Well, there are three levels. And then another person was saying, well, all the garages are going to be turned into rental units.
Yeah.
And, but, I mean, you're listening to this conversation.
There are three-level single-family homes that are detached. They're not,
right? It's kind of like San Francisco Row houses.
Yeah.
There's no community garden. There is no green space. There are very few trees on this area. It's a very sterile environment, and they're calling it family.
And it's right next to a transit center. I thought the model that we're hearing from California's state legislature is that we should be pursuing more mixed-use development around transit centers.
Well, and diverse housing options, all that. There's literally, and I've told the council this, I've said in multiple public meetings that there's $1 billion coming out for transit-oriented development that could not just pay for building the housing and building the affordable units into that and making the units more modest sizes. It could pay for sidewalks down McDowell.
So
it's all the infrastructure, everything. These are $30 million chunks of our tax dollars that our city's not currently pursuing, and we should be.
So do I understand the deal correctly? There was an agreement between the developer for this property and SMART to come up with some plan for both the station and a housing development there. Then it came to the planning department or planning commission, and wasn't it rejected twice?
Three times. And it's more complicated than even what you're saying. So SMART has a parcel in downtown next to the station, and in exchange for the developer giving a parcel, a small chunk of the land at Corona to SMART for a parking lot there, SMART's giving the parcel to the developer downtown. So there's a land swap going on there.
Okay.
Now, what happened at the 11th hour before it went to the city council is there was a second land swap that was added in where instead of putting the inclusionary housing, the affordable housing in the downtown parcel, the developer was going to propose that they pay what's called in lieu fees. Mm-hmm. And that basically is just a chunk of money that so that they don't have to
pay impact fees.
So they don't have to put in affordable units.
Oh, got it.
They were going to locate all the affordable units out on Petaluma Boulevard South by the roundabout, which is, far away from services now.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
The whole point of putting, affordable units near transit is because you give low-income people access to the entire regional job market.
I thought our city declared a climate emergency, and I thought that was supposed to be one of the number one priorities in terms of approving any development and redoing the general plan. What's going on? Now, how did the vote come out?
It was unanimous. Yeah. Unanimous for a climate emergency, by the way.
Yes, it was. But it was unanimous with the current council, but only two of our council members actually voted with the Planning Commission to reject the project as currently proposed. That was Teresa Barrett and Delinda Fisher. So all the other council members made a different decision, and I don't quite get it.
What it is a council member had told me, if we don't do this deal, we are never going – sorry about that. I'm pounding on the table. I apologize.
That is not an explosion. Janice pounding on the table.
The council member stated to me that – they want to go ahead and support this deal because it's good for downtown.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is you guys are supposed to be representing East and West, and we do not have a representation on the East side. It's like, oh, we'll just give them whatever because we don't really care because it's really important about downtown.
Yeah.
And I think they've just lost their perspective because without having sidewalks on McDowell all the way to Lagunitas, and without the Corona overcrossing, which was built in 1956 and is dangerous for cars, trucks, bikes, and pedestrians, that we are not going to have a walkable community.
No.
And yet, I had a young couple comment to me that they are really excited about the East Side train station because they live right by SMART in downtown.
Oh.
They're going to get on the SMART train, and they're going to take it to the Corona site so they can walk up to Lagunitas. And then there's Hen House, there's Griffo Distillery, and then there's the healthcare district also.
So we need sidewalks.
Sidewalks, people can't get there, and that is why tomorrow's march is so important that we meet at 9 o'clock tomorrow at 901 Petaluma Estates.
Yeah, we'll park in the U.S. Postal Service.
Oh, okay.
Because it is a private community, the Petaluma Estates, the mobile home park. But, yeah, we're going to one of the council members at the Monday's meeting suggested that people could walk from the site to down Sonoma Mountain Parkway and go there. They can walk down to East Washington, and they can walk to Beyond the Glory. I don't think she realized that there's not a contiguous sidewalk that goes to Beyond the Glory, and that's actually the closest shopping center. So we're going to walk ourselves down to the closest shopping center. We've coordinated with the police department, and they've been gracious enough to have a police car that's going to tail behind us so that we can walk in the slow lane because there's obviously no sidewalks, and they'll slow traffic for us really try and make the point that we want walkable communities and that it's not just the West Side that deserves good urban design.
Right.
I started on this, and I was thinking, I'm a land use advocate and I'm TOD advocate, but as I,
Transit-oriented development.
Yep, sorry. Transit-oriented development. Yeah, okay, sorry. Got to get the acronyms out.
Right on the bat.
And what I, sort of come to right now is that this is just as much an environmental justice issue.
Yep.
Where, the cheapest unit that they're going to be selling here is $600,000. They've minimized the number of affordable units, and they've done nothing to try and help the existing neighboring residents get out of their car.
And
Dave King has the audacity to say that he doesn't believe we can keep people out of their car.
Yeah. Who said that?
Dave King said that at the council meeting. He said, I just don't believe it's possible. And I don't expect him to have the answers, but I do expect him to believe that it's possible.
The sidewalk.
He's a tentative. He's said that he's interested in going on the Facebook invite, so I hope he's there. Dave, if you're listening, I really hope you're there.
Right.
And
I hope
you get to,
I want to point out to people so we don't lose anyone, because folks out there might think that this is a done deal and it's not going to do us any good to do walking. This vote that happened earlier this week was a straw poll vote. It was not.
Yep.
It did not set anything in stone. So there's still a chance to turn this around. So being present at this march is important.
And even more hope than that was after the straw poll vote, everybody was sort of against the in-lieu fees on the downtown parcel and sending the low-income populations, farther away from services. And what council member, another resident, actually lovely Jenny Griffo of Griffo Distillery.
Mm-hmm.
Jenny, if you're out there, thank you. She is also a developer, and she specializes in mixed use and multifamily developments. And she provided an alternative vision that is sort of a compromise between purely single family and actually incorporates in some more modestly sized apartments and a small amount of ground floor retail so that people can get out of their cars. And at the end of it, Kevin McDonald had, I don't know how, but at 1:30 in the morning, it was a great idea to use the in-lieu fees to actually purchase a segment of the land at Corona and locate the affordable units there so that we can actually do a better project at Corona.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be, I think that there is some hope there. I'm reaching out right now to try and, not only just schedule the walk, but also looking for buyers for the property and things like that so that we can actually come with like a really packaged proposal that, this is obviously better than just building a whole bunch of little homes that are you know, small townhomes that are really, I mean, the point of those homes is not to meet Petaluma's needs. That's to attract people from San Francisco that want to leave San Francisco and serve that community. And it's not really for Petaluma residents. And I really hope that the city council comes around on that.
I think it's really important that a lot of younger people do not want large homes. Yeah. They're very happy with a small, modest, either apartment or a condo.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to see units in there that, you know, you could actually purchase for a reasonable sum of money. Just as long as you can't purchase it and then use it as a rental. I want to find that when people are talking about affordable housing, this is my kids. This could be Brian. This could be any young person that is trying to get into home or a senior
citizen. Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, people, like in my situation, for example,
are pretty old.
My kids are getting of the age where they're still with us, but they're, you know, at a certain point, they're going to be moving out, and we're going to have all this extra space.
Right.
Is it going to make a lot of sense to stay in a larger home like that? There's a lot of people, I imagine, in that position as well, where they want to get out of what they're in because it's too big and maybe costly and go into something that's smaller, that's closer to transit.
I think what you're hearing is that there's a need for this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people are not recognizing it's not just young people that may move into these areas. Sure. People selling larger homes and then, you know, buying down.
Seniors.
Seniors next to a train station is really important. And that's why the beauty of the mobile home parks across the street. We need to integrate that so they have actually access to move within this county and not in a car.
That is the largest demographic that's growing in Petaluma also.
That's right.
And that was brought up at this meeting.
Yes, it was. Can I bring up this one more thing? When we're talking about the march, of course, you know, I always have to go to the bigger picture, a little bit different. But when we're talking about people needing services, Lombardi's is right on Petaluma Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have access from east to west, that Corona overcrossing. You don't have access so senior citizens or kids or families can just walk over there, go to Lombardi's, buy some stuff, do a picnic, and then there's, of course, the Corona Reach, which is all these trails up and down the river. And we need to incorporate this as the Corona Reach, preserving that instead of developing in that area, because we are going to continue flooding if we continue building in the direction that this council's going.
It's super important. I mean, in general, we have to look at planning as a process of looking at everything.
Right.
And what I've observed since getting more involved in this is that our planning function is a processing function. The developer comes and then they work that developer through the process to get their project approved. And there's not much thought about how does it integrate with the surrounding areas.
Right.
You know, oh, well, we're going to put this development here, but we don't have sidewalks anywhere.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to put the fairgrounds here. We know we need to do something with the fairgrounds. Let's build a big box store right next to it.
That's what's supposed to happen at the Planning Commission, though, isn't it?
Generally speaking, I don't think so. Yeah, but if they don't listen to the Planning Commission, you know.
Well, the other thing is we need to update our general plan, because obviously there's a lot of things that have changed with respect to climate change, for example, that should be obviously taken into account with any development. I don't know if you heard the news about New Jersey, but they now have the strongest regulations for building right now for flooding concerns because of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be taking that into account.
Is that because of Katrina?
Well, it's because they're noticing, I mean, they're getting more flooding. And so now to go into any approval process for development, that has to be taken into account. And I would imagine the kinds of development that we've talked about near Rainier, that we need to reconsider that as well, because sea level rise is going to be much higher than anticipated.
Well, another thing
is, makes that their number one priority in their SCTA budget, and it's $100+ million. It's the 85% line item. So we're going to build one road that's going to put, and they want to put 100 McMansions on it, and that's again, it's just I don't feel like it fits with the culture, the character of our community. It certainly doesn't preserve it. Open space and farmlands.
Councilmember Kathy Miller, in an article a few weeks ago in the Argus Courier, said, oh, yeah, the streets are all going to get fixed if you go ahead and support this. No, 85% of the funds go to Rainier, which means that the developers will never be assessed for it. You and I are paying for it. And the other thing is I'm starting to go through the old EIRs for Rainier and then the 101 widening. That in the documents that are being presented to the city council, the city is not saying, okay, well, this is what it said for the 101 widening when it came to flooding, that if you continue flooding, I'm talking about the third lane, which is now being built. So if you build that third lane and you continue building in the flood areas or water going into the Petaluma River, which is the area that floods, you're going to bring the 100-year flood level down to a 40-year by 2040. Well, 2040 is around the corner. Yeah. And so the city is not looking at the past documents, incorporating those into the new documents, folding it in, such as CID Common.
Yeah.
And so they're not incorporating any of that into old documents. So, well, why even have old documents if you're not going to look at those? Because we're going to have more flooding because what the city is not doing.
Yeah.
Ignoring.
Well, this goes to an article actually you wrote. This was December 13th, 2019. The headline was "Let's Hold Petaluma Leaders Accountable." And we're going to go ahead and include a link to this when we post the show as an archive.
Sure.
But you make an excellent point in rebutting many of the points made by John Burns in his op-ed piece. And you say, hey, thanks for your opinion. Here's a different view. And you mention the council members that are up for re-election. Healy has been on the council since 1998 and Miller since 2012. Both Healy and Miller and Councilman Gabe Kearney are up for re-election in 2020. One of their hallmark issues has been the Rainier Crossing. So as year four goes by, and again they fail to deliver on their hallmark promise, now is the time when they need to create a swirl, renew empty promises, and dupe the community into re-electing them. Insert Burns in the procession of surrogates that will surely follow.
Kind of like the other journalism.
Okay, yeah, that was one of my more fiery lines.
Your next paragraph, rather than commend their leadership, some contest that their decision-making has been a major contributor to Petaluma's decaying roads, increased traffic congestion, decreased levels of police service, tax increases, budget shortfalls, growing GHG emissions, and lack of affordable and market-rate housing. For some in the community, this is the legacy of our long-term council members.
Yes. Well,
let's go into yesterday's Argus. What did John Burns eat? A community matters. A dedicated tax to fix city streets. No, John, that dedicated tax is not to fix our streets. It's all going into one project.
Yep.
There's actually five projects, four minor ones and one major one. And, you know, the minor ones will get maybe done, but the big one is going to get done. And the street in front of your house is never going to get fixed. And so right here, this is yellow journalism at its best in the Argus Courier when the old publisher comes back and is basically touting lies as a council member also is saying the same lies in articles. Yeah. And it needs to be pointed out, and I really appreciated your article, Brian.
No, it was strongly worded, but I hope you still stand by it. I think every point you made was valid.
The decisions that get made at the local level are what we can say what we want about the federal level.
Yeah.
We all probably are, you know, we're in California, we're in Petaluma, sure. We're probably generally in agreement about that. But when it comes down to the local level, it's about, you know, where your money gets spent and the land use decisions, in my opinion. Those are the two biggest ways that our cities either, you know, create community and help us or they screw us.
And it's where you have the biggest impact, frankly.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's, you know, our land is our, in a place like Petaluma to hear, you know, one of the things that made me so upset was that right before John Burns came out and said, you know, was saying that, you know, great job on Rainier, and he cites some decade-old data that, you know, says, oh, do you want this road? But it doesn't say, do you want this road and do you want to pay $100 million for it?
Exactly.
It never says that.
With little, if any, traffic mitigation.
Right, and then that week, literally, the Argus ran a...
Sorry about climate change.
They ran a poll that, and like I think it was 90-something percent of the people said, we don't support developing in floodplains.
Right,
yeah.
Now, floodplain, what I don't like about the term floodplain is it's a technical term, legal term, that's a floodplain, you know? But
and they say
the bottom line is open spaces have flood mitigation value.
Right.
And that's the thing, is just that... You want open spaces like that to slow the water runoff into the river. And so regardless if it's designated a floodplain, in quotes, the bigger issue is that you're diminishing your community's value and the resilience amidst climate change, sea level rise, floodings, things like that.
Well, and I think if we're going to talk about flooding, we need to talk about the dredging discussion the other night. I looked at the one, two, or three the council had a choice of. And you start looking at this, there is no scientific data in there at all. We're just giving a council member a choice. Oh, well, this one wants to go ahead and do the drain it. Just skim the fat off the, you know, basin so we can bring the boats back in. Mm-hmm. Another one says, well, if we don't do the marina also, all that silt's going to come and fill in the basin with the tide. So they had no idea what they were talking about, in my opinion. There was no science behind determining one, two, or three. And they all of a sudden found $2 million to what I say is it's like, you know, doing a pot of chicken soup, you know, and then eventually skimming the fat off the top. They were just skimming the fat off. They weren't looking at the bigger picture. And so...
Now you made me hungry for chicken
soup. I know. I'll make you some. And so, you know, when you look at upstream development, and then you look at downstream with the Corps of Engineers project, it always said it would be degraded. Yeah. And as the 101 documents are also saying it will be degraded with development in the floodplain. But the city council is just focused on the river because that's in the basin, because that's what's politically motivating them. We have to get out of the politics and we need to look at the science and the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And I've been doing this for 26 years, saying the same thing. The Corona Reach specific plan needs to circle the city. Mm-hmm. That's why the Corona overcrossing should have been redone many years ago. And I just found it interesting listening to this dredging discussion with so little understanding of the science behind dredging and flooding and the bigger picture. And, you know, when you're talking about looking at the bigger picture, this is the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And the city council is picking because, on the agenda tonight, we're going to be talking about dredging and what the city's going to be
doing. Talk about flooding.
Yeah, let's talk about flooding and how you flood instead of talking about dredging and saying, maybe we should do this, maybe that. And it made absolutely no sense. And my science background is I'm a dental hygienist. I've had, you know, some good microbiology, anatomy, physiology. And I don't have as much in the environmental science, but it all flows together. Yeah. So I do understand science, what science base is.
I don't think it needs to be. Yeah, it's not science. It's critical thinking.
You're right.
When I was supervising young people, I said, ask yourself, so what, five times before, you know, like you finish that paragraph. Because if you thought, ask yourself, so what, five times, you've thought that, you know, that's critical thinking. Yeah. You know, that's the process, is asking yourself, what does that mean? Oh, so what is that going to happen? You know, you think through the systemic downstream things that, you know.
Well, and then it's colored sometimes because people make election promises, and sometimes they're promising to the people, and sometimes they're promising to the backers that fund their campaigns. And, you know, so there's a lot that happens at the local level that, they are doing those, you know, so what's. But the problem is the answer is that's how they get reelected. You know, it's a promise they've made. And this Rainier thing, you know, back to that, that's just been a ball that's been thrown up in the air for every election since I can remember.
Yeah. Since 1994 when the Who Pays initiative was on the ballot and they were asking, who pays for this? And the city was never honest about it. It was going to be an assessment, and not just developers, but the public was going to be assessed also, property owners within the area, not everybody in town. And so it's been this myth that they have. It's a constant lie is what it is.
And they're also, they referenced the ballot measure that wasn't it in
73% support Rainier. Yeah, but you didn't put a funding mechanism.
Exactly.
You know, I'd say, yes, I would like a piece of candy.
Yeah.
I like that green one, too. but how much is that one compared to the Snicker bar?
Right.
Which one can I afford? I mean, it's just beyond.
I mean, it was a regulation. And going back to the climate emergency, I was at a climate forum last week, and one of the big, bold things that people said, we need to reduce the number of auto-oriented streets.
Right.
The amount of street space dedicated to the cars needs to be cut in half. So what we're talking about now when we look at the SCTA budget in for Measure M, we're looking at more of the same. And for their council that declared a climate emergency, or not declared, adopted an emergency climate resolution,
yes,
it's an embarrassment to be focusing so much on automobiles instead of alternative modes of transportation. The city of Palo Alto went into an alternative streets mode, and right now half of their middle school and high school kids are riding bikes to school.
That's right.
They have got data to show that. That's, you know, it's great to see that. And, you know, when you, I was sitting there before the fairgrounds meeting this morning, and someone was saying, this traffic's terrible, and they're all going to the schools to drop their kids
off.
Right,
right. Well, that's part of the problem.
Because there's no safe way to school.
Yep.
Also, part of the problem is, and this is a controversial thing to say, but there's so many options for people to go to different schools. There's a lot of people that don't just go to the one that's closest to them.
Yeah.
They trek all the way over across town to a charter school because for whatever reason that they feel that's best for their kid. And I'm not begrudging that, but the problem is this has induced more traffic.
Well, because Loma Vista, which used to be Bernard Eldridge School, is now, it's Spanish immersion.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that want to send their children to Spanish immersion. And so you're
or a Montessori school.
Right.
I mean, there's a river school over in the industrial park on the east side of town. There's people that were living right next to McNear Elementary that then decided to drive their kids all the way there. And it had another effect with reducing the student population of that school. And then guess what? They had to increase class size and cut teachers. So, I mean, all of these things go beyond traffic inducement, but that's part of the problems we have.
But we also talk about parks. Where do you put parks? Right. And we always wanted to go ahead and make more central, which would be in the central part of our community.
Yeah.
But instead, all the parks are on the outlining areas because those are basically urban separators.
Yeah.
So the urban separators ended up becoming parks, and parents have to drive their children there. But if you had maybe a better transit system, which it is getting better. You could get your kids there in a different way, but it's the mindset that has to change.
Yeah, we need a new land use paradigm in our city.
Exactly.
We need a new way of thinking about land. I mean, the fact that we're thinking about putting 185 units at Sid Commons, and we're looking at 110 single-family homes at our train station, that's just completely regressive.
With the one one egress and...
One person at the city council meeting on Monday night said, if Essie said that Petaluma's, or the smart train is going to be a ski lift for the wealthy, and Petaluma's going to be a playground for the rich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what Petaluma is doing right now by approving this. There's no, there all the council members saying we've got to do this now or SMART's not going to do it. You know,
it's not
true. SMART has not said that. They have not confirmed that.
Right.
They have not, you know, they've been mum on it. I wish SMART, my opening comments, I said, I was told never to name your dog Lucky because it's going to get hit by a car. Don't name your dog Happy because it's going to bite someone.
And
don't name your train Smart because you're going to get dumb land use.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're seeing.
Well, I was surprised by one of the council members because, I thought that when he was running, he was pretty clearly on the side of smart growth development. And so I was disappointed. I hope he comes around on this.
Yeah, I hope so, too. And, I mean, he came up with the brilliant idea at 1:30 in the morning, but I think that it's important too that project was complex to begin with. And in the days going up before the agenda was posted, it became way more complex.
Right.
There was all these new documents that were added, a whole new land swap that needed to be commented on and thought through.
Right.
And how do you expect people to make good decisions when you don't give them time to discern, ask questions, think things through? And then, I said, if you combine complexity and urgency, that's a red flag for bad decision making. It's a red flag for bad partnership, bad negotiations. Mm-hmm. It's a common negotiating tactic because then you tell people, oh no, we can't change the scope
right
now. So for Kevin McDonald at the 11th hour at 1:30 to say that, it's like he would have said that for sure if he had more time to even know that that was going to be on there.
Well, I don't think you start an agenda item like this at 10:30 at night.
Right.
When a lot of people had to leave. I left at 1:30 and I went home and I finished watching it at home.
Yeah.
And that is not good planning.
Well,
and it's really unacceptable that even happened.
The sad part about it is that a lot of the people who live in the mobile home parks across the street are seniors.
Right.
They didn't stay up that late.
Well, the men that I walked out with at the same time, they were not happy campers. And you know what? It's an election year. And these people are going to remember that project across the street.
Yeah, it's a complex issue, but evidently, two of the council members were able to see through the complexity. I want to thank Mayor Teresa Barrett and Council Member Delinda Fisher for voting.
Yeah.
The right way, in my opinion.
I want to also call attention to some of the things that that we can do to encourage better development around our train stations. So our impact fees right now are largely based on a dollar per unit, so a dollar per household. What that encourages is developers, they want to build fewer units, so they pay less in impact fees, mm-hmm. right? And they want to build larger units because they can sell them for more.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we ran... a project that had more units, they were smaller, single bedroom, studios, things like that, 300, there were still fewer bedrooms than what the developer was going to put in with those single family homes, and less square footage. And it was double the impact fees. Mm-hmm. So for someone who wants to build more modest sized units, 350, 500 square foot studios for people that make them affordable, it's just impossible. It's not feasible. So, and when you look at the Smart Master Plan, they have a section in there called the Development Incentives. And the recommendation number one is change our impact fee formula so that we are encouraging more modest, diverse-sized housing. Oh. And we haven't done it.
What do you think the chances of that happening would be with the current council?
I think that... I've talked to some of them about it. They said, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal. Impact fees aren't that big of a cost. But when you're trying to put together a budget and you're trying to get your cost of capital down, every little bit counts. And if you can increase the value of your sale of your asset and reduce your cost, of course you're going to do that. So,
right.
I don't see it becoming a priority for our council, unfortunately. But that's more because... good development around our train stations isn't a priority for them. If they were prioritizing development around our train station, we'd have much higher impact fees on wetland development, and we'd have much lower impact fees per dollar per square foot is what was recommended.
I don't think there was a single council member running who said they were opposed or not in favor of transit-oriented development. That's what cracks me up.
Well, it's easy to say that, but they need to understand what it really is.
Yeah. Well done, and better than well said.
Yeah. Well, with the SB, what was the SB 50?
SB 50.
Yeah, and so this is Wiener was going to put this on, and what I see an issue is that the city went ahead and did a stationary plan. Mm-hmm. Well, the stationary plan is kind of outdated already because now the train is here.
Right.
You really want to go up higher.
Yeah.
So they can only go up to 5 stories. Okay.
Right.
The first project that they approved is 4 stories instead of 5 stories.
Yeah.
And so you have to have flexibility within these plans. And there is a value with the state coming in and saying, hey, you guys need to build more density, and especially around rail stations.
Right.
And the city council, the comment I got back from one member was, well, we have the stationary plan. We don't need the state to come in and tell us what to do. Well, apparently we might need to, because we're not building the density we should around rail stations or master planning.
Well, it just costs too much, too. When you go above 4 stories, you have to get into a different building material.
So then let's go 6
that.
And 7, so it makes it better.
I'm for it, because I think that increasing the height and density is... You can't advocate for conserving the floodplains and things like that unless you also advocate for increasing the density in our services.
There are incentives also. The state does supply some funding, grant funding.
Well, I think there would have if you would have worked with the state, but the city has basically pushed the state out, or the state out.
Yeah.
We're not interested.
We're running out of time.
We're in isolation.
Please come to the march tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay, that's why I wanted to save a minute here for you, Brian.
Yes.
For you to go ahead and tell us again about this march, where we're gonna meet, where to park.
Yep. Park in the post office on McDowell Boulevard. Meet across from the development site at the 901 McDowell Boulevard. It's Petaluma Estates. We'll meet in front of that place. And we're going to walk from there down to Beyond the Glory. We're calling it the Corona March. We're going to march from the Corona train station down to Beyond the Glory and get ourselves a Corona.
Yeah.
Who knows?
So we've been talking with Brian Barnicle. Thank you very much for being here with us today.
Thank you.
I'm sure we're going to have you back again sometime, if you're willing.
Yeah, this is fun.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Super fun.
Yeah. And you have been listening to Inside Petaluma. We air every Friday from 11 to noon. And if you want to hear all about our lovely community and our opinions on that, and
we always have them,
and of our wonderful guests who come here, please join us 11 to noon every Friday, 103.3 FM in the Petaluma area and online at kpca.fm. And go to our Facebook page, KPCA Inside Petaluma, and our website, InsidePetaluma.com. Okay, got it all in.
See you next week.
Have a good weekend. See you all later.
Thanks.
Bye.